Blog Talk Radio.
Wake up, everybody, no more sleeping in bed. No more back to thinking, time for thinking ahead. The world has changed so very much from what it used to be. There's so much hatred, war and poverty. Oh, wake up. A new way. Maybe then they'll listen to what you have to say. They're the ones who's coming up, and the world is in their hands. When you teach the children, teach them the very best you can. The world won't get no better if we just let it be. Na, 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 na. World won't get no better. We gotta change it, yeah. Just you and me. Wake up all the doctors, make the old people well. They're the ones who suffer and who catch all the hair. But they don't have so very long before their judgment day. So won't you make them happy before they pass away. Wake up all the builders, time to build a new land. I know we could do it if we all lend a hand. The only thing we have to do is put it in our minds. Surely things will work out, they do it every time. Let it be. The world won't get no better. We gotta change it, just you and me. Need a little help, y'all. Yes, need a little help. Say it, boy.
Need some help, y'all.
Change the world what it used to be.
Can't
do it alone. Need some help,
that's right. We need the help now. Welcome to Missing Pages of History. It's the 24th day of September 2022. We welcome you to another episode of MPH Radio. Our theme today is mass media and social communication. Yes, we're going to talk about that theme and other issues, and we invite you to join us as we continue to serve the underserved communities. Welcome to Missing Pages of History. And our agenda for today will entail giving you something to think about, followed by MPH Black Minutes Act. And we will have a special profile from the community, Brother Anthony Williams, a community organizer and Pan-Africanist, followed by a theme or the theme for today, mass media and social communications. As we close out, We will give our community a message to be heard from by Brother Alex Joyner. Always closing out on how you can help MPH Radio. That's our agenda for today as the voice of MPH Radio. We're going to proceed right now to give you something to think about. And that's something to think about is this concept of freedom. Freedom is the concept where one ought to talk about, fight about, die about, and still trying to understand what it is. And we want to just highlight to you a couple concepts of freedom from different people's perspectives. Toni Morrison is that the very serious function of racism is distraction. It keeps you from doing your work. It keeps you expanding over. It keeps you explaining over and over again your reason for being. That was Toni Morrison's definition. Or response to this whole question of freedom. We'll move to Alice Walker, who stated, "Activism is my rent for living on the planet." That's right. Activism is my rent for living on the planet. What do you think about that concept? And last not least, we're going to bring in Angela Davis. As she stated, "In a racist society, it's not enough to be non-racist. We must be anti-racist." Let me read that again. Sister Angela Davis stated, "In a racist society, it's not enough to be non-racist, to be racist." So we gave y'all two conceptual concepts of this question dealing with freedom today. Tell me, how do they fit in your concept in your daily life as you talk about and fight for your freedom? We now will proceed. Please get out your pen and piece of paper. We will proceed with Susie of MPH Radio, and she has some black mini facts she would like to share with you, and we now bring her on. Susie, welcome to MPH Radio.
Good evening. The black mini facts today, Saturday, September the 24th, 2022, comes from Mackenzie Jean Phillip, and she's with the Hearst Magazine and Yahoo.com. The first one is Bar Fights, written by poet and activist Lucy Terry in 1746, was the first known poem written by a black American. Terry was enslaved in Rhode Island as a toddler, but became free at age 26 after marrying a free black man. The next one is William Tucker was the first known black person to be born in the 13 colonies. He was born in Jamestown, Virginia in 1624, according to blackpast.org. His parents were indentured servants and part of the first group of Africans brought to colonial soil by Great Britain. And we also have Lucy Stanton. After graduating from Oberlin College in 1850 with a literary degree, Lucy Stanton became the first black woman in America to end a four-year college degree. And last for today's black mini facts, we got Bill Pickett, founded in 1984, the Bill Pickett Invitational Rodeo is the only touring African-American rodeo in the world. And then I've just given you a few mini facts for today's Saturday, September the 24th, 22.
We'd like to thank Susan Pace for her black mini facts today. And at this point in time, we're going to go to a station break with music with a message, and when we return, we have a special segment that we're going to be doing from time to time, where we'll bring in a special guest, Mr. Anthony Williams, who's a community organizer and Pan-Africanist. He will be part of our special segment of Community Profile by MPH. We will do this when we return. This is MPH Radio. Yes, we too believe in teaching the children, teaching the youth. Let's show them a better and a new way where they can make their contribution of building a better humanity. for all man and womankind. We'd like to welcome you back to MPH Radio. We have a special segment from time to time, which you can become a participant. If you have someone in your community that is doing great things or making your community better, we would like to do a profile on that individual or that organization. We want to build from the bottom up and not from the top to the bottom. We are missing pages of history, and we want to fill in those missing pages where the rank and file are known and given their proper credit for making their contribution of moving humanity forward. And today, as very, very, very special guest on the MPH community profile for this particular program, there's no other than a community organizer, a Pan-Africanist, a political organizer. We bring to you the one and only Mr. Anthony Wynn. We'd like to welcome him to MPH Radio. Welcome, Brother Anthony.
Thanks for having me, Brother Lee. And I'm very honored that you decided to give me this recognition for the work I've done over the years.
Brother Anthony, this is MPH Radio, and we believe giving our people their flowers while they are living, and we will keep it growing when they make that transition. Because the contribution and the choice that you made to become a community organizer, a political organizer, is a choice that is very important to keeping the community intact and giving them a means to help them move forward for a better future for all mankind. And for over 20 to 30 years of your life, you have done this on a volunteer basis, a country basis, and you honor a very special individual. We are going through the ranks of doing things based upon because you know it's a need, you know it's the right thing to do, and you never place money as a criteria on not trying to do what you can do to make your community, your people, and all of humanity better. So in that light, we are very honored to have you on this program and to help us fill in one of the many missing pages of history in terms of who are our real workers, and you are one of our real workers that the world needs to know. So again, Mr. Williams, we thank you for being here. If you can, Brother Anthony, you can explain to your people briefly in terms of what made you become a community organizer, a political organizer, Pan-Africanist. What drew you to take on that particular role?
Okay. Let's see. Briefly, I had transferred to Howard University in the summer of 1982. And I had transferred from a predominantly European institution. And one of the things that struck me about Howard, even though it at that time it was known as the Mecca of Black education, one of the things that struck me when I first started, enrolling there and taking courses there, was how similar it was in some ways to some predominantly European institutions I'd heard about. Had the chance to attend. One of the things that struck me was the faculty was mostly European, even though this was an HBCU. And the nature of how courses were taught also reminded me of any predominantly European institution. And prior to enrolling in college, One of the things that that I was curious about was why Africans were so mean to one another in my, you know, community. And one of the things when I went to this predominantly European institution, I found I encountered blatant racism for the first time in my life. I'd grown up in a predominantly African community of Newark, New Jersey. And, you know, and the thing, you know, that struck me as I was growing up was how mean Africans were to one another. You know, in terms of the games played, you know, the activities they used to engage in for entertainment, and how they would tear each other down, one another down psychologically and whatnot. And so I was, and also I had the opportunity to read a couple of historical books I borrowed from an aunt of mine. Africa's Gift to America by J.A. Rogers, and Justice Denied, an anthology, a series of articles that highlighted the oppression of Africans throughout U.S. history. And those were some of the factors that motivated me to become a Pan-Africanist.
Okay, Brother Anthony, can you let our listening audience know what discipline you acquired while you was at Howell, and how was you able to use that tool, or how did Howell influence you to develop other tools that helped you become what you are known today as a Pan-Africanist, and define that, and how does that play out in terms of helping to make your community a better community?
Okay. Let's see. I majored in chemical engineering when I was at Howard University. And let's see, that gave me some of the technical skills, such as, you know, programming and using computers, which helped me in terms of my organizational development. And I was a member of, let's see, HUSA for a while. And that intensified my organizational skills. And I was able to employ those inside of my organization, the All African People's Revolutionary Party, GC. And I was able to utilize that to help organize our people. Pan-Africanism is the total liberation and unification of Africa under scientific socialism. And this is an important objective because it is the objective that will solve most of the problems Africans throughout the world are confronting.
Okay, Brother Anthony, one of the things to understand an individual and his contributions, a lot of times you must look at the nature of the institution that he either worked with or have created to do the work that he's doing. Now, when we talk about you and your role inside of the All African People's Revolutionary Party, GC, to our listening audience, talk about the historical significance that this organization has played in the context of trying to improve and advance the African community inside the United States and globally throughout the world? What would you say has been some of the impact that this organization has played based upon the work that you have, you know, in Canada as being a member of this organization?
Okay. One of the things we have emphasized since we started organizing in the African diaspora in 1972 is that all Africans, regardless of where they're born, their religion, or ethnicity, are Africans and belong to the African nation. That is one of the undergirding principles of Pan-Africanism, that regardless of where in the world you live, where you're born, if you're of African descent, then you are African, period. And this is something we've struggled with Africans over during our nearly four decades of existence, that we're African. And that we need to be organized into a Pan-Africanist political party that is independent of any of the capitalist parties that exist in the world.
You know, Brother Anthony, one of the things as a community organizer, and you can speak to this based upon your own experiences, is to try to redirect and refocus our people from a perspective of looking at themselves as being a citizen of a country being very hostile towards them, to developing love for their homeland, their motherland, which they originated from, which is Africa. What the struggle has been like in terms of trying to convert our people or redirect our people to refocus them to look at how Africa can play and will play a very important role towards helping them to achieve their real total freedom from a global perspective. Can you speak on that struggle and why that is important to you as a community organizer?
That struggle is important to me because it is very important that we achieve Pan-Africanism. And it has been a very difficult process because we're dealing with relentless enemies. Capitalism in all of its manifestations, including imperialism, racism, Zionism, and other forms of exploitation of one human being by another. And let's see, and there is a lot of misinformation spread about Africa through the educational system that most of us are subject to, and the capitalist media, such as movies, television programming, and artistic expressions, such as music, art, commercials, movies, etc. And this has made the work very difficult, but very rewarding at the same time, because in our efforts to politically educate and organize our people, we have seen some gains, some victories. And, you know, and it's to the point where a lot of Africans, even in the diaspora, are not ashamed of being called African anymore. And let's see, and the battle is to get them to realize that they are Africans and that we have one common identity, common forms of oppression, and one homeland, one history, and one destiny, ultimately. And that we have to organize to fight for our liberation. And Pan-Africanism is an objective that can make Africans throughout the world free, both at home in Africa and in the diaspora.
You know, Brother Anthony, when one listens to your presentation today, one will probably ask the question, where is this issue of political leadership today within our community? Where is it? How do you create it? As well as, where is the thrust of trying to form organizations or organizations that will help lead our people? Because it seems like we are in disarray. And folks, with some people argue that we have no leadership. Many will say there are no organizations that would express the desire or the problems that confront our people on a global basis. As a political organizer, based upon your 30 to 40 years of working in community, how do you respond to your people dealing with those sentiments?
Well, the All African People's Revolutionary Party, GC, is one organization that people can look to for the solution to the problems that confront them worldwide. However, it is not the only organization, and we do not necessarily have all the answers. But we have the most important answer to the problems that confront us. And there are a lot of people that look for visibility in their leadership instead of looking at people that are doing the day-to-day work necessary to bring about the permanent organization of our people. And this is a major problem because people tend to equate visibility with power. It is not the same. Power comes from the bottom up, from the organized masses of the people, not from the top down, by handpicked political figures that are selected as the political leadership of our communities, that are handpicked by our enemies. That is not the true political leadership. The true political leadership comes from those masses of Africans that are trying to organize our people for permanent change. And it's a lot of work. And oftentimes, it is unglorified and underpublicized. But nevertheless, it is absolutely necessary in order for us to gain our true liberation from all forms of oppression.
Brother Anthony, before I open up my lines to a few questions from others who may want to ask you about your experience of being a community and political organizer, I would like for you to address this question of party system, power to vote. Are you understanding what is its limitations? Or if it doesn't have any limitations, is the essence of the power of the vote is the secret weapon of bringing us our freedom here and abroad? What is your perspective by being able to participate in the various movements throughout the world, how voting has been used positively as well as negatively as relates to a people moving forward? Can you share with us your perspective on this issue of voting?
Sure. Well, within the U.S., the perspective a lot of our people have is the voting is the be all and end all of political power. However, voting is only one aspect, and when you use your vote to vote for the very political parties that are responsible for your oppression. And really, the Democratic Republican parties are really one organization because they represent the same ruling class sector of society. So it's one organization that is disguised as two different organizations. That is one limitation of voting in this country, is that for nearly 150 years since we've had the right to vote, we've either voted for the Republican Democratic duopoly, which does not represent our interests. And a careful analysis of the history of the Democratic Republican parties shows that they have never represented the interests of the masses of working and struggling people in the United States. Now, in societies that are trying to represent the working masses of people, voting can be a viable option. But again, it is only the first step in that process. And a very minimal step, voting. But because of the oppression of the masses of poor and working people suffering in society, that is all they have time to do. And that is why organization is so important, because you have to organize to put pressure and hold our leadership accountable for their actions.
Okay, Brother Anthony, what we're going to do right now, we're going to take a few questions before we give you your final farewell statement, and we will open up to my co-host, to Brother Alex. Any question or comments, Brother Alex, you'd like to make? And address to our community profile for this week, Brother Anthony Guest. Brother Alex.
Well, thank you, Mr. Lee, for giving me again an opportunity to be on the show and welcome everyone, and especially Anthony today, because he's given us some information that we need to take to heart. Mr. Lee, you have asked him some questions that were on the tip of my tongue. And so you sort of got me struck here for a moment. But there are some other things that I would like to ask him, because, again, he has touched on subjects that we truly need to take to heart right now. And is yes, it's about organizing, because the vote only means a small part, but also to push for legislation, to come up with ideas, to work together, that organization part. That is so important to expressing what the people truly want. Because in America, just like most countries in the world, there are millions of poor, millions of disenfranchised people. And these people are being led astray by the 1%, 5%, 10%, or 20% of the population that controls them. And usually, again, as Anthony said, whether there's a two-party, three-party, or four-party system, usually whoever the party is being bought out by the rich. So if they're being bought out by the rich or the dictatorship or whatever, then the people still suffer. So my question, you know, to Anthony is, you know, today, and you can answer it any way you can, Anthony, we have been ashamed since the moment that we came here from Africa, and we have been taught to hate ourselves, as you mentioned, even the word being called an African. So I would like to ask you, how do we change that perception, not only here in America, but also in the world, to be proud to stand up and say, my heritage is from Africa. Not to want to claim if you got 5% of your DNA from China or Europe or wherever in the world. But when can we stand up and say that 50 or 60, 70, 80% that makes us African? When can we be proud of it, and how can we accomplish that? And I turn it back over to you, Anthony.
Certainly. I think it starts with teaching the truth of our history, the role that we have played historically in the development of human society. And the examples are overwhelming. But because we do not monitor what happens in the school system, our youth are taught misconceptions and lies about our history, about the role that we've played and the suffering we've undergone since we were forcibly brought to the Western Hemisphere. And that has to be corrected. And it's never too late to start, but it is critical that we start with our youth. And also those adults that are open-minded enough, that have not become too close-minded to the brainwashing that we've been subject to for nearly five centuries about our history, identity, and culture. And it's very disparate still in this society. And we still, do things to degrade ourselves, like using the N-word, for example. And, using disparaging terminology to refer to each other. And if we don't watch what happens in the education system, in the media, we end up producing people that hate one another and hate themselves. And that is one of the many lessons that Brother Malcolm X had left us with.
Okay, Brother Anthony, we'll take one more question, then we're going to ask you to summarize your final thoughts to our community. We'll take caller 4298, caller 4298, your question or comment for Anthony.
Thank you, Brother Lee. Brother Anthony, it's been a pleasure to have known you for the period of time that I've known you. I know that you have been devoted to the struggle for Pan-Africanism, and I respect that. I'm not sure where I'm going in terms of the question. I don't really have a question. I just thank you for your service. Thank you.
Thank you, caller. Brother Anthony, in your closing remarks, we'd like for you to give us, address two issues. One, what kind of books you recommend where people want to learn more about our people and our history and our struggle. What books would you recommend as being a good start to learn more about our people and raising our consciousness? And the second thing is, will you just speak to the youth of our community and how you can encourage them to become more active and more positive in terms of being a tool for forward progress and change for the development of our people? Your final thoughts on those two issues, Brother Anthony.
Certainly. I would start with... any of Kwame Nkrumah's works, in particular, Ghana, an autobiography, which is an excellent illustration of how a student can be a catalyst for change. And also the autobiography of Frederick Douglass, which is useful for giving a perspective of what conditions were like for Africans under chattel slavery in the U.S. And also, in terms of looking at the role that Africans have played in advancing humanity, I would say World's Great Men of Color, the Garvian Garveyism, Ready for the Revolution, Kwame Ture's autobiography, co-written with Michael Thelwell, and all of Osachi Folo Nkrumah's works, and for those of you who are fluent in French, Sekou Touré's works as well. He was the first president of Guinea. And Strategy and Tactics of the Revolution, Africa on the Move, and Black Power by Kwame Touré, also known as Stokely Carmichael. And Stokely Speaks, the autobiography of Malcolm X. And I think what the message I have to the youth is that you must give back for all the sacrifices your parents, ancestors, and other families made in order for you to be able to get to the level where you're at today. And the seat you occupy in a college or university, what isn't yours alone, is the result of the work of those people that struggled before you, that made it possible for you to get the opportunities that you've had, either academically and professionally. And join an organization that is working for your people's liberation. We must be organized as a people. And that is what I've dedicated my life to, ensuring that we're permanently organized.
And Brother Anthony, on that note, you've been organizing on behalf of our people for over 30 to 40 years, and we would like to ask you to leave us with information where you can be contacted and information on your organization for people who hear your message that will maybe like to invite you to come and speak to our community. How can they reach you and find out more about your organization?
Okay. You can contact us by visiting our website, www.a-aprp-gc.org. You can contact us via email at info@a-aprp-gc.org, or you can call us at 202-246-4896. Those are the best ways to contact us. And please visit our website often, because we have frequent activities and events planned, and material that might be of interest to anyone that is interested in African culture or African history.
And on that note, Brother Anthony Williams, a community political organizer, Pan-Africanist, a member of the All African People's Revolutionary Party, GC, we'd like to thank you for being this week's MPH Community Profile guest. We'd like to thank you for your contributions that you are making to our people and to humanity, and we wish you the best. We thank you for your contribution to today's program. Thank you, Brother Anthony.
You're welcome, and thank you for having me on. Appreciate it.
All right, this is MPH Radio. What we're going to do right now, we're going to pause for the calls. We're going to play some music with a message, and when we return, we want to have a live discussion on our theme today, mass media and social communication. That's right, as human beings, one of the most important things we do on a daily basis is to communicate with one another. How we communicate, the form that take place, what's going on in communication, and how it may influence your thinking, influence your development is very important. And we want to take just a little look at some of the missing things that may not be said in this realm of communication dealing with mass media. So we're going to when we return to discuss this particular theme for the day, mass media and social communication. This is MPH Radio, and one thing we want to do is stay together. So let's stay together. We'll be right back.
Whatever you want to do,
Welcome you back to MPH Radio. Today's theme is mass media and social communication. We thought to highlight this particular theme today because there are so many things that are going on in the realm of this particular industry as it relates to mass media and the various forms of social communication. We would like to highlight some interesting articles that deal with this aspect. And one of the articles, if you haven't seen it yet and you get a chance, we will ask you to Google it, titled, I Don't Want to Work for a Military Contract. Google Amazon employee in Seattle protests cloud ideal with Israel. Now, that's a real interesting article, and we'd like to have some discourse on it. And the thesis of this article is that it raises some fundamental issues of the contradictions between the relationship between the workers and their boss, the workers and the company, and who has what rights and says so. Should a company have the right to participate in any kind of business activity or agreement? Well, the employees' feelings, the employees' belief, the employees' perception of right and wrong and don't want to engage in what they perceive as not being just and right. How do you balance those concerns when they arise? In this case, yeah, many employees from Google and Amazon are caught in the dilemma of using their special expertise to give to a company or give to some companies, in this case is Google and Amazon, the right to contract with the Israeli government to create various forms of technology and social communication means that can be used against other populations unfairly. In this case, we talk about the Palestinians. So in terms of this particular dilemma, Alex, and my listening audience, I'd like for y'all to weigh in on how y'all feel about this dilemma. Should employees have the right not to want to participate in that kind of form of engagement if they feel like their expertise would do more harm or bring harm to innocent, unjust people and communities? Brother Alex, give me your thoughts on this.
Well, Mr. Robinson, when it comes to a right to work, you have a guidelines, and most jobs, they have a human resources department that passes out something called a worker handbook. So you have different descriptions in your job of what to do and what not to do and what the company expects you to do. When you sign on with a job, sometimes you sign on with the restrictions of doing what that company asked or requires you to do. Personal convictions come from the employees themselves, because evidently the company wouldn't have put it in its bylaws to say to do this or do that when it comes to international or national things that may be against the employees' beliefs or concerns. We live now in an age where we are a melting pot of people all over the world. No country is secure in its own. It has people from everywhere. So to decide what a company can do within its borders is left up mainly to the government as it passes laws down to it. But that doesn't say that the worker himself cannot sponsor a revolt and say that the laws that the company has made for us to follow against our beliefs are right and just. Sometimes that's where the courts have to come in to decide company policy. So I look at it as an individual as is a very hurtful investment to many people on both sides. And it's all about money, capitalism, because who's going to profit from what's going on? Google had to know. Amazon had to know. Apple and all the other companies had to know. So when you know something, but you're still going to provide this type of information on another group of people, knowing that it was going to inflict this type of reaction, you took your chances with the money. That's what companies do every day, as they trade and barter services all around the country. We are in this capitalist society only to move forward with wealth. Found out that some of the stockholders and shareholders are not too happy either that this has came about. So now that you do have some people at the top questioning, is this right? Maybe the workers who are protesting have an ear into management to maybe try and change things. We don't know what direction this is going to go. But anytime any person is spied upon, the information is leaked, different things are said about them, because that's how propaganda spreads. That's how lies and rumors spread. Because people get information on you and they misuse it. Who is to say that everything that's being done, whether it is to help the defense of Israel or not, we don't know how they're going to use the information and the technology that they are now about to acquire. How are they going to use this? I guess, again, we have to look at innocent people. Because not everyone in this world is bad and wants to kill one another. You do have a lot of innocent people. And usually innocent people stand up for one another. They're the first ones to complain. And because they are being tormented. We have a world record of tormenting people to make money off of them. So I say it's only fair that this came from America first. And then I want to open it up and give it back to you and hear some other responses about this. And I thank you so much.
Okay, next, we bring in Susie. We'd like to get her response. Susie, when you look at this article and read this article, and we're talking about the dilemma, it put the workers in. How do you feel about this dilemma? How would you address it as a worker? And if you was an owner, how would you perceive as an owner? What is your thinking on this particular contradiction between the conflict of interest of the two sets of forces, the owners and the workers, and how they may use your talent on something that you feel adamantly against? Bear with us. She has some technical difficulties on the phone. Can you hear me now, Susie?
Okay, I can hear you now. What I think, basically, when you like any job, when you go to it and stuff, a lot of times I think the workers may have didn't necessarily take the step to really, really look into the organizations that was willing to work with Israel or whatever. And because of that, that was a mistake on their part, because basically these companies going to do, they have their agendas, and their agendas are made it way in advance a lot of times, but you really have to dig deep. So their best solution is protesting. It was a good idea, but the thing of it is, I don't think that's going to change anything, because politically you got so many different options that these companies are given. So therefore, the only thing that they could do in the beginning was to just try their best to investigate it, and then basically maybe just make the decision not to necessarily go with a company if they are practicing or going into some issues that they don't particularly agree with.
Thank you for your perspective, Susie. We're going to go to a caller there. We've been caught up the last four numbers, and callers, you have heard the discussion. Where do you weigh in? Caller 0796, caller 0796. Welcome to MPH Radio. Yes, caller, the mic is on. What is your perspective on these conflicts of interest? The workers versus the owners, and wasn't that their technology should be used based upon their expertise to be used as a tool or form to bring harm to other people? Yes, caller, 0796.
Absolutely. Well, thank you so much for taking my call, and absolutely not. And social media right now is being used as a tool both directly and indirectly against the working class and against Africans and minorities in this country in particular. You see the mass shootings in schools. You saw the shooting of African Americans in Buffalo. So you see social media as being used as a tool to manipulate the masses and the working class. We just saw with the recent election in the Philippines, it was reported that Marcos Jr. didn't carry around, he didn't have journalists that joined him on his campaign trail. He rather had publicists who joined him on his campaign trail. So rather than the people receiving news and getting a reflection on what was happening throughout the Philippines, instead you saw what Marcos wanted you to see as a production. This is a problem throughout the world, but in particular in the United States. And it's an outrage. And I think that Zuckerberg should be penalize or the control of these mass media corporations need to be more tightly regulated. Definitely some type of control. He refused to take down the right-wing racist sites and continues to let them go forward, and all they have bought so far to the nation has been mass murder of children, African Americans, and Jews and other minorities, including Asian Americans in Georgia, for example. So we definitely don't want this as a community. We do not want this as Africans, as a nation, as a community.
Thank you, Carla, for your thoughts on this particular issue. As we talk about this concept and theme today, mass media and social communications, it raises a real important issue in terms of why Big Brother is so interesting in finding out what things are being communicated, what in between the people, and what links are they willing to go through to make sure they have direct connections of your various forms of social communication. And I think this issue plays out through a recent article. We will ask our audience who have not read and have not seen it to please take some time and look at it. It may and will have impact on you in the future as you travel about in and outside of the country. This article was written on the 16th of this month, and it is titled, U.S. Borders Forces Are Seizing American Phone Data, Storing It for 15 Years. U.S. Borders Forces Are Seeking Americans' Phone Data, Storing It for 15 Years. In other words, as you live and cross back and forth on the borders, they are taking U.S. citizen communication devices, phones, etc., and they are recording and copying the information on your phone. And they are saying that they are keeping this information for at least a minimum of 15 years. Why is this? Is this something just that people should tolerate it, or should there be a greater pushback? Brother Alex, we'll leave us all for your thoughts on this particular phenomenon that's going on now. Your thoughts on this, Brother Alex.
Well, Mr. Robinson, for a long time now, the rights of the individual are being pushed to the limit, almost being removed, because we had the Patriot Act come forward after September 11th. And then we've had more acts, more laws, further taking away your privileges. When we look at where we travel inside the United States and outside the United States, people coming inside the United States, people going out the United States who are not citizens, should we all be subject to extreme and unreasonable monitoring? All of our daily lives, we are being tracked from our phones, from our tablets, from our computers, from our televisions. We are being tracked. So many different companies know what you buy from every purchase you make off of Amazon because they sell that information. How much more of your information is being traded amongst other partners? When we look at companies that are buying other companies, just for your information. Yes, they want to look at your phones to see what you have, your laptops, your tablets, or whatever. They want to track you for every moment because, again, they're not only looking for every dime that they can get out of your pocket, but they're also looking for something that they can, say, sell to insurance companies knowing that you may be a potential person that may cost them a lot of money down the line. You know, health is a huge concern. And when companies start investigating people's health, then insurance rates and policies and different things like that start going higher. You know, we start paying more for services because now they have the data to do so. So by tracking you and all your purchases and everywhere you go and your likes and your dislikes and different things like that, they have a wealth of information. And not only can they use it now, but with a 15-year limit. And who's to say that they're going to stop at 15 years? They may keep your information forever to use against other generations, to use against your children, what you buy versus what they buy, what their interests are versus your interests. We are living in a sad time of personal security, of how to keep your own information safe. So many times that we look at the commercials and we see identity theft and how you can prevent it and different things like this. This is a prime example of how, even with the best security, information can still get out. So we have to scrutinize any time that we see that something simple as your cell phone, your laptop, your tablet can be used against you to make somebody else a profit out of the pocket and determine the future laws which you have to abide by. So there are so many things, you know, that this article, you know, presents, but is it absolutely necessary for them to do so? Are the risks and security to this country? People have traveled around the world for centuries, thousands of years. There is no safety if someone wants to do whatever they want to do. It will happen if they truly want it done. It's hard to prevent everything that happens. Some things will get by even the best. Security. Yes, I believe in it at the airports, and I believe they should be checking here and there. But when it comes to certain things, I believe that is, and by the Constitution, yes, an unjustly search and seizure of property. And I turn it back over to the listeners, and I want to hear what they have to say.
And we will go to Susie and get her perspective on this article. Susie, is it a question of Big Brother is doing this because they just can? What is your take on the impact of them going into people's phones and getting their data information? One of the things we know what it does is it gives them a reference to your relationship to people. And that can be used as a tool as well against you. But just your thoughts on that, Susan. What do you think?
Okay. The thing about it, when you look at this custom and border protection, they shouldn't have the right. The thing of it is, when I have questions as far as when this actual organization was created to give, to have access to your information without your knowledge, and also if you decide not to go along with them, that they can actually hold your devices for 5 days, which is wrong. But the thing about that, I think as a whole, people should be uprising about this, because when you look at the rights that you're supposed to have according to the Constitution, it's being broken by this particular company. Now, how to stop it and everything, we need our legislatures to really step in and even look at this even longer, although we know to some extent, they know that this Customs and Border Protection is confiscating individuals' information, which is totally against what we used to stand for, that your private information was your private information. So it definitely needs to be really addressed, and I think only way we're really going to be able to address it is to get our legislators to really come in and work and monitor and make sure that this kind of thing isn't happening, or at least giving individuals the right to say, I don't want you to have my information, a form of some way that it can be blocked so they can't get it regardless.
We'll go to our next caller, and one of the things I would like just to add to discussion is this whole question seems like in the so-called mythology of the right to speak and the right to associate and these rights you have by the Constitution, this seems like it wouldn't be allowed. But, you know, when the empire is falling, all things happen. We go to our caller 4298 first. Caller 4298, any thoughts on this issue? 4298.
Yeah, it's a question of rights and personal privacy, I guess, if there is such a thing. I think, you know, that we should be protesting this because it is dangerous in terms of the government. We know the government's up to no good. That's the bottom line. And so they empower them with this kind of power them and these companies with this kind of power, this kind of surveillance. It's not good in the long run. I'll leave it right there. Thank you.
Thank you, caller. We go to our next caller, 0796. Is this a measure of desperation to keep the empire alive and in power? Call your thoughts, 0796.
And your question was, is this a strategy to keep the empire alive? I think it's a strategy of invasion of privacy. And I think that after 9/11, when new bills were passed allowing the invasion of our privacy, that was never put to rest. And here we are two decades later, and this has just become part of the norm. I think it's an extreme invasion of privacy. And the feedback on what Brother Alex said, you know, when they keep track of your health information, they already have some leads as to your children's health information. For example, if you're a diabetic, there's a probability that your child will be a diabetic or have high cholesterol. So we see this kind of gross investigation and storage of information. We also recently, about a week ago, a young man named Dylan Field sold his company called Figma, F-I-G-M-A, to Adobe. So we see the industry becoming more monopoly oriented. He sold it for $20 billion. So we see less diversity in the corporate world. We're seeing this kind of authoritarianism politically, but also corporately, where there are less and less diversity in the corporate community and an increase in monopolies. I see this as a danger for the people, and that's about it. And also, it's really changing global dynamics, because now, for example, the second wealthiest man on planet Earth and the first, they don't live in the United States. They're not from here. The Musk, the guy that builds Tesla, is the wealthiest. And number two is a guy named Adani, A-D-A-N-I. He's 60 years old, and he's from India and lives in India. And his interest is in green energy and cement. And so we're seeing the world change, and the United States, as you said, as everyone had mentioned, is a falling empire. But the concept of multinational capitalism and social and an imperialism is not going away. It's just diversified. And the big players are China, India, the Great Britain, the EU, and the United States. So, and you could say Canada. So the fight is on. But this invasion of privacy through the media is outrageous. Again, in the Philippines, it was found that 92% of the voters in the Philippines had their computers hacked before the election, filling it with the data that Marcos Jr. wished to be presented to the voters. So, I mean, you're seeing Big Brother playing a big role in making us automatons. And that's a frightening thing, where we're marching to the orders of Big Brother with no consciousness at all.
Thank you, caller. We're going to have to stop you right there.
Thank you.
And we'll come back to you later. And to go to our last point as relates to our theme today, mass media and social communications, I think a lot of it centers around this aspect as well. Now, when we talk about mass media and social communications, one of the things you must look at is the consolidations of big companies taking over small companies, big companies having more influence on the various tools of production and mechanism of who own and control it. So it's becoming a lot more consolidated. Power and wealth is becoming a lot more consolidated by a few people. So when we talk about mass, are we really talking about mass, or are we talking about you have a small collective ownership that's dominating all of the major means of production? And this will seem to be happening in the field of mass media as well. Now, there is an interesting article, again, listening audience, and those who have not, we would like to alert you to read this article, Google this article, which is titled Exclusive Big Tech Spend Over $30 Billion Acquiring Companies While Regulators Try to Reel Them In. When the subtext states, Amazon leader PAC spending at least $16 billion in acquisitions in 2019, with at least $5.6 billion spent 3 months. Now, one of the things about what you do with competition, if you can buy them up, that means they're no longer competition. You become an oligarchy or monopoly. And that seems to be what's happening now. So what can we take from this issue of big money buying up everything? How do we deal with that? What do you make of this article, Brother Alex, some of the concerns that you have as relates to how it could impact the whole issue of mass media and how various people will be able to communicate and who will have access to your communication? Brother Alex, your thoughts.
Well, I would say, where's Teddy Roosevelt when you need him? A man known as the giant killer who destroyed a lot of monopolies in his time. Well, to honestly say, it was all the front. And a lot of those companies came back with a vengeance and started new fortunes and new features. So when we look at what's been happening as far as our lives are concerned, again, we have to look at what we are considered. We are being considered, just like the stocks on the stock market, something to be bought, sold, and traded. Our information about us is bought, sold, and traded. Big companies. Oh, big companies. How they love to merge. How they love to grab all the little guys, force all the competition out, destroy the small businessman as much as possible. When we look at the likes of Walmart, when we look at the likes of Amazon, when we look at the likes of General Motors, there are so many large companies who have destroyed smaller companies as they claim on their way up. But what have they really provided the community? What are the real good jobs that they have offered? If you get a job at Walmart, I don't think it's the best job in the world. I think if you're working at Amazon in its warehouses, as they have also tried to provide or vote for unions because they want better pay and better conditions. Even when we look at UPS or American Express or any company that's out there that claims by grabbing smaller companies that they can do more. They're only doing more for their stockholders and investors. That is the bottom line. We live in this society here in America that's only interested in the bottom line, because from that bottom line comes all the profits. As long as you are able to acquire and merger and take over like companies and companies that are not like, but the information that you need on that consumer may be in that company. So that is why it's so important to kill this legislation, these couple of bills that have been trying to get up into Congress, to stop all this merging. But we have senators on both sides of the aisle who are turning their backs because they are being bought out also. Our Congress is being bought out. It always has by the lobbyists that's been there. But it is being bought out by these companies even more so, because your information counts for something. That's all their profit. And they depend on these mergers so that they can continue to grow. If we stop these mergers, then smaller businesses, more competition can be out there. Prices will be lowered. Look at all the cost that we're paying now. It's not because of gas. Gas has been going up. Gas has been coming down for years. But they see an outlet now of how they can get your information to know what you're willing to pay, and they will make you struggle to pay because for some reason they think that the American public will be considered the wealthiest country in the world with the wealthiest citizen, so that you can buy anything that they can give you. And I like to turn this over and listen to some more comments. And I appreciate everything, Mr. Lee, here today.
Okay, we'll go back to our participants. We're speaking on this article, reacting to our listening audience to check out exclusive big tech spend over $30 billion acquiring companies while regulators try to reel them in. Can your politician reel in big money spending businesses? That has always been the question. But anyway, we're talking about the field of communication. When you're talking about fighting those in power and they control the major means of production, they control the major means of how they can influence what people think and how they think, how do we overcome this? Your thoughts, call us 0796. And we give you 2 to 3 minutes to make your statement. 0796, welcome back.
And would you please repeat the question?
The question is, we're talking about how big tech companies spending over $30 billion acquiring companies while regulators try to wheel them in. can politicians, can regulators reel in the spending of big companies that are buying up industries for their own private use of interest?
I don't think they really have an interest in doing that. As I had mentioned earlier, just in the last 7 or 8 days, $20 billion was spent by Adobe to buy one company called Figma, F-I-G-M-A, from a guy named Dylan, D-Y-L-A-N, or Phil. $20 billion, and this is to monopolize, as you all said, it is to monopolize and to narrow the margin. So we have a type of corporate imperialism. They and Congress isn't acting to reel in corporations, and the interest in the U.S. as a market of consumers isn't that we have money to spend on any and everything, but it's one of the largest single consumer markets in the world, meaning we all buy similar things, and it's 360 million of us doing that. So multinationals have a real interest in this market, and Congress is so they're such neophytes until they don't realize, as the speakers have said, that the U.S. isn't the big cat on the block right now. I believe China has the strongest economy in the world, or is the wealthiest nation in the world. No one's come out publicly to say it, but I would believe so, and that's because of the U.S. capitalists having looked for cheaper labor over the last few decades, and in doing so, they divested from the United States and U.S. workers. There are no more textile battles in the Carolinas as to union labor versus non-union labor when it comes to sheets and towels, because they're now being made in Pakistan. There's no more fight over steel contracts, because the steel industry has been in China for the last several decades. All we have left is the Rust Belt up in Pennsylvania and in those areas. So, quite frankly, no. Congress is not trying to reel in these corporations. It would have done so, and it wouldn't be so much discussion. There would be more action, and that's simply a yay to legislation that would reel them in, but they've taken no affirmative position in doing so, and I don't believe they will. And think, the article said 30 million, but since that article has come out, Adobe spent an additional, it said 30 billion. And since that article has come out on the 16th, Adobe has spent $20 billion on purchasing one company. And yes, that monopoly in the social media and this new communication era, this is a real danger to the masses, because they end up with more control than the government or anyone else, because they are studying the algorithms and who you are and what you're doing and who you're communicating with and when you communicate with them and where from. All, there is no privacy. And there is a great threat to freedom and liberty to everyone in this country and around the world with this kind of growth through monopoly capitalism.
Thank you, caller, for your comments. And one of the things listening to you, caller, reminded me of the reality that many times they are creating prison-like conditions. They are imprisoning people, and they don't realize they are being imprisoned. Let's take caller 9289, his thoughts on this issue. I mean, caller 4298, caller 4298, your thoughts on this question of big tech spending over $30 billion acquiring companies, and while the regulators try to wheel them in. Your thoughts, caller.
The regulators try to wheel them in? That's interesting.
Yeah. Do you think they can do this? Do you think they're really trying it, or are they on the take two?
I hadn't noticed how they were trying to wheel them in, but maybe I'm just ignorant of what's really going on. But the capitalism is running wild. You know, capitalism is unfettered. That's why as a Marxist, you know, it's not my day. But I have faith in the people, though, and that's the name of the game. The people united will never be defeated, and it's my faith in the people that takes me into, I don't know, various occupations and situations. But I believe that there's a basic good. The people spontaneously gravitate towards socialism, as they say, the masses spontaneous, but it is a science and it has to be studied. But I don't want to go on and on.
Okay, thank you, caller, thank you, caller, for your comments. We're talking about the mass media and social communication, and we're discussing this article. If you haven't read it, you should read it, called Exclusive: Big Tech Spend Over $30 Billion Acquiring Companies While Regulators Try to reel them in. Now, we're talking about how all these companies are buying out other companies, creating what you call an unfair practice where there's really a monopoly. We're talking about these companies controlling the very forms of social communications and what that means. What is the implication? So we'd like to have your thoughts on this. We'll try call over 9052. Call your last phone number, 9052, before we move on to our closing. Caller 9052, do you have any thoughts on this issue? 9052, the mic is yours. Going one, caller 9052. You have any questions or comments on this issue? I guess not. I guess this caller just want to listen. So what we're going to do right now on MPH Radio, what we're going to do right now, we're going to go to a station break, and when we come back, what we're going to do is we're going to have a message to the community from Brother Alex. He's going to share a special message to the community, and then we'll have our final thoughts and close out on how you can support MPH. Well, our theme today, mass media and social communications, and you think this is an issue, that this is a page that many people will not talk about, but we want to bring it to your attention and fill in this page because it's very important. Those who control your communications, they also control many things that can impact your well-being, such as your thoughts, such as how you develop as a people, as a human being. If they control your communications, they also can control your activities and what things you may or may not be able to do. Is this what we want to take place in the ongoing future? Is this what Orwell was talking about, how Big Brother will eventually interfere into your daily lives and try to dominate you? This is MPH Radio. We are working towards filling our missing pages. So we're going to take a station break with music, with a message. And when we come back, Alex Joyner will have a message for our community. This is MPH Radio. We'll be right back. Acquiring other companies, when they can spend billions of dollars doing research against your will and interest in creating entities that will turn you into a slave. All they want to say is they don't care about you. That's not the question. The question is, we the people, what are we going to do? Do we care about ourselves? When they write their history, they write their history and not yours. When are we going to come forward and fill in our missing pages of history so that we can use it as a guide, as a blueprint to map out a map to make a better future for our communities of people? This is one of the tasks and objectives of MPH Radio and its organization, Missing Pages of History. We come and ask you to help support us and join us. If you have an interest, please contact us at mphradio@yahoo.com. We'd love to have you to come and help build this institution. We also will create, appreciate any love and support you would like to give to us. Write us, we will tell you how. But more importantly, we want to create institutions that are everlasting, that will transfer from one generation to the next so that people can constantly learn, develop, and grow. So in this area of mass communication, the people must have control of this important tool. But if they don't, it means serious trouble for future development. So at this point in time, as we close out our theme, mass media and the social communication, again, we encourage you to Google the article's exclusive big tech spend over $30 billion acquiring companies while regulators try to reel them in. And we'd like to also ask you to look up this particular article that states U.S. border forces are seizing American phone data, storing it for 15 years. What do y'all think about that? And last not least, the article titles, Workers Don't Want to Work for Military Contract in Israel. Check that out. Check those articles out. Give some thoughts and understand that without information, people cannot think. And without organizations, they cannot think clearly. So encourage you, like always, to join the organization. Set yes to one today as we highlight MPH community profile guest, Mr. Anthony Williams and the All African People's Revolutionary Party, GC. Join the organization that are doing something to help make your community better in humanity. So right now, we're going to do our transition to our segment, Alex Joyner will speak to the community, a message to the community. We'll now bring back our beloved brother Alex. And what is your message to our community, brother Alex?
Well, Mr. Robertson, I'd like to thank you for this wonderful show today. But I like to say that there are less than 50 days to the midterm elections. Will you go to the polls? Or are you leaving it up to someone else to decide what's happening in your community? Yes, many feel that the power of the vote means nothing. There are so many millions of people who are still not registered. Some common responses when asked are, I am too busy. It won't mean anything. The lines are too long. I have been in trouble with the law. I don't know who to vote for, or I couldn't get off work. People have died trying to vote. They were beaten and hanged trying to cast a ballot in hopes that some candidate would honor the amendments to the Constitution and bring equality and justice to their country, a country made from the sale of cotton. The picking of cotton has caused the deaths of thousands of slaves by 1843 when abolitionist A.G. Duncan composed this verse of My Country, 'Tis of Thee. Stronghold of slavery, oh, thee I sing. Land where my fathers died, where black men's rights derive. From every mountainside thy deeds shall ring, my native country thee, where all men are born free, if whites their skin. I love thy hills and dales, thy mounts and pleasant vales, but hate the Negro sales as foulest sin. Let wailing swell and breeze and ring from all the trees the black man's wrong. Let every tongue awake. Let bond and free partake. Let rocks their silence break, the sound prolong. Our Father God, to thee, author of liberty, to thee we sing. Soon may our land be bright with holy freedom's right. Protect us by thy might, great God, our King. So this brings me to cotton pickers riding past huge farms in the South. It always amazes me the seemingly endless fields of white plants my grandmother called cotton. As we walked into her little country church one Saturday, you could see a field of cotton where maybe 20 or 30 people were moving up and down the rows with large cloth sacks. They were singing and praising the Lord and seemed happy and content. It was hot and humid, and I was sweating just looking at them. I knew they had to be uncomfortable. After the service was over, and as they talked to friends and other church members, I ran off with my cousin over to the field. I wanted to see the cotton. I wanted to touch it, to feel it, to see the big white puffs up close. Before he could show me how to pull off the bloom, I grabbed it. The stem of the plant tore into my fingers without any mercy. It was worse than rose thorns. Blood flew everywhere. My cousin said, no, you can't do it like that. Let me show you. Then he gently pried the bulb apart and pulled out the white stuffing. I stood there with my hand bleeding, knowing I could never do this. To pick 100 pounds or more of this almost weightless substance in this heat, I would need more than singing to Jesus. This work by my ancestors with no pay was wrong. What Christian person would ever make another human being suffer this tradition of picking cotton to make them wealthy? One had to be a mighty cruel person indeed. For centuries, cotton was king in the South, and the ones who picked it were considered worthless, unimportant, and undeserving of human rights. I learned a lesson that day of a greater respect for my elders. They had toiled in these fields of shame for centuries, but never gave up their hope of faith that one day their children would be out in these fields working for free until they died. They imagined a better life for them, no matter the cost. A thing called freedom arose in their minds. It would break the shackles of slavery and bondage and make them citizens in a country they loved but were not loved in return. As cruel as life can be sometimes, breaking free of bondage is heaven sent. My grandmother told me that her father got the right to vote in 1870, but there were men at the polling place with guns to keep an eye out for blacks who chose to do so. He was a family man, and he had a gun also. So as he and the others, after picking cotton all day, walked up to the old courthouse to vote, they were told they had no more ballots, no ballots for blacks anyway, by one of the white Klansmen who stood watch. As her father and the others continued inside, he told the gunman present that he came to vote with his blood and his life. He was willing to die for his family's freedom. He was allowed to vote without incident. My grandfather's story reminded me of Thomas Mundy Peterson, determined efforts to vote on March 31st, 1870. The 15th Amendment had been ratified on February 3rd, and he is credited with being the first African-American to vote in an election in the United States afterwards. Peterson was born in New Jersey in 1824. His father was free, but his mother was a slave. Peterson was a general handed man and a custodian at school number one, located in Perth Amboy, New Jersey. The citizens of Perth Amboy awarded him a gold medal for his courage to vote. In October 1989, the school was renamed in his honor, and March 31st is celebrated as Thomas Mundy Peterson Day in recognition of his historic vote. But he was far from the first African-American to vote in an election. Over 700,000 African-Americans had cast votes in the United States before Peterson. Several New England towns and northern states had allowed some free men of color to vote since colonial days, though some states later rescinded those rights. New Jersey had allowed black residents to vote if they met residency and property requirements until 1807. Several states of the former Confederacy had allowed black suffrage early in Reconstruction, Louisiana. For example, had the nation's first black lieutenant governor, first black mayor, and the first black elected member of Congress in 1868, each largely on the votes of freedmen. The power of the black vote in America cannot be ignored or dismissed. The children are the ones whose hands that once picked cotton, time has come, a new time and a new day for America are here. Run, Jesse, run. Yes, standing at a rally for Jesse Jackson in 1984 made me remember the debt we owe to all those dead cotton pickers who dreamed of a better country to call home. It all starts with the simple right to vote. In their honor, please go to the polls and vote this fall. I promise you, it won't hurt to vote as much as the thorns hurt my hands that day in the field of cotton. Please let us not go back to those days of our ancestors. My dear brothers and sisters, if you do not vote this fall, and continue not to vote, we may find ourselves back in the fields like our ancestors. And I thank you, and I love you, family.
Thank you, Brother Alex, for your message to the community. And as a reminder to our listening audience, we are reminding you that MPH Radio, in conjunction with the African Awareness Association, will be traveling to Cuba coming this new year, January the 23rd to the 30th, 2023. We ask you to come and join us in the name and support of Brother Emmanuel Joyner, who was a co-founder and member of this radio station. We also like to remind you that this program can be listen to every other week, and our next program is scheduled for October the 8th at 1 p.m. Put down your calendar, spread and share the word. And like always, if you'd like to show your love and want to be a member and supporter, you can email us at mphradio@yahoo.com, and we can tell you how to do that. So on those announcements and everything, we just would like to remind you that, like always, let's strive to move forward ever and backwards never. Let's give information that will serve as a basis for a true liberation. And remember that this whole question of the mass media and social communications is an issue that we must pay some attention to and find a way in which those means are in the hand of and controlled by the people and not by the rich and the powerful elite. So until next time, we just want to let you know that we are here for you. Help be an MPH radio program as well as its organization. So like always, we'd like to thank Brother Anthony for being a participant as a special guest on our MPH profile segment. And we'd like to thank Alex always for his message to the community and Susie for delivering us important mini facts. So until next time, remember, join us every bi-weekly on Saturdays at MPH Radio. By dialing in at 818-337-0016. Or you can go to Blog Talk Radio Network and type in Missing Pages of History. And you can connect with us by that manner. And like always again, as we talk about our history, we would like to leave you, remind you of these historical facts. On the 24th of day of this month, in 1894, E. Franklin Frazier, a sociologist, was born. John Carew, novelist and playwright, was born in Guyana in 1920, and on this date, Guinea-Bissau received its independence in the year of 1973. Remember, history is best to qualify those who research. Until next time, remember we are here for all of us. This has been MPH Radio. For the voice of MPH Radio, we say, a Luther continue, the struggles continue. We'll see you on the 8th. Thank you for allowing us to come to your homes this evening.
Brought together so that we could love each other since we are here.